Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you could go no shirt, vest, just like all the time, would you?
I don't think the world would like that. I don't tan so well. So if I could tan, I'd consider it.
Yeah. You don't have the color and I don't have the shape. No, you know what I mean? Neither one of us are looking good.
Next week, our cover art will be me and Rob in leather vests just for you guys.
Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're... Got me. We're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So I'll never be an outlaw, own a motorcycle, drive a motorcycle, or even ride on a motorcycle.
Okay.
But if I did, I would jump on my hog, my Harley, and crank this up as loud as those motorcycle speakers would go and be that obnoxious vroom vroom guy with the leather chaps and feet porting towards the sky. And heck, while I'm exaggerating, I'd have a tan up top with just one of those leather vests, ridiculously long flowing hair, the thickest goatee known to man. Rob, tell him what song I'm blasting down the highway.
This is Highway Song by Blackfoot. Dude, immediately I'm going, why did we not talk about the all-time motorcycle songs?
Yeah.
You're 1,000% right. Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere, every pack of cigarettes in the country just awakened. They felt their call.
It just lifts up.
There is something about the way this song feels.
Dude, yes.
I mean, it is mesmerizing. That is Highway Song by Blackfoot from the 1979 album Strikes. Is the name of the album Blackfoot Strikes?
Or is it just Strikes by Blackfoot?
Yes.
I'm thinking it's just Strikes.
I've seen it called both.
Okay.
I've seen it called both. I kind of like the idea of it being called Blackfoot Strikes.
I like that too.
That sounds cool.
I haven't heard that till right now.
And the album cover is just a cobra head that's like kind of coiled up and ready to strike. It's a great looking album cover.
And I'll give you a teaser. My Step the Genius was actually going to be album covers with snakes on the cover. Okay. But I couldn't come up with it good enough. So that was not, but it was close. All I could come up with was like White Snake, something Alice Cooper related, and maybe the Metallica Black album if you count that.
Oh, true, yeah. The little, not hologram, but like an imprint overlay of Snake, yeah. It was written by Ricky Medlock, our guest today.
Absolutely.
Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot and Lynyrd Skynyrd and Jackson Spires. It went to number 26 on the Billboard Hot 100. And the album went to number 42 on the top 200, and it is certified platinum in the U.S. Now, if you've ever only heard this song on the radio, there's a chance you may not know about the ending because the single version was shortened. Mm-hmm. Now, I feel like over time, you're probably more likely to hear the full version now on
I feel like radio plays all of
classic
it
rock station. But if you If you don't know, the whole song doesn't feel like what we just played. Mm-hmm. It turns into something different here at the end. How good is it once the BGVs come in on the chorus? Adds a whole other layer. So now we're going to go double time. Tell me if this feels familiar. And for about the next 2.5 minutes,
yeah,
this is where we're going to live.
That's how they do it in Gainesville, folks. That's, I'm sorry.
That's right. That's just how stuff comes out.
That's how it happens in Gainesville.
Yeah, that's right. North Florida, this is just what happens when you start playing
no
a song.
No matter what song you start, it ends like that.
you just look around at your bandmates and know.
Give them the nod. Yeah. That's right. It's Amazing Grace, freaking double time it.
Amazing Grace with a 6-minute guitar jam at the end.
Just the way God intended it.
4-4. I love it. What is it? Can you double time 3-4?
I don't know. 6-8? Not really. No, it's not right.
Oh, gosh. So this song is like a whole genre, right? Walking down the lonely old road, driving down the highway in a minor key. Like there's just a... This song belongs to a certain subset of songs that are about this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's good. Yeah.
This is not the first song to be like, I'm driving down the highway, right?
Are and you
I'm,
kidding me? What a concept.
Right. You know, I'm lonely. I'm driving down the highway. It's kind of like, thematically, it's really kind of another side to like Faithfully by Journey.
Okay.
Right? It's got that same, you know what I mean? Loving a music man ain't all it's supposed to be. It's like, I miss you, basically, is what we're saying here. So, you know, highway song, I'm all alone, blah, blah, blah. It's that same kind of thing. An incredible jam song. You could jam on the song forever, even before it hits that double time section. The feel of this song from start to finish is incredibly
jammy. I would love
jammy.
To hear Rob play a guitar solo over this song. This is like his speed. Like he would blister it even before he gets to the fast stuff.
Here's the thing that I love about the riff, the beginning riff and the riff that runs through the verses and stuff is it's this like arpeggiated riff. It's a chord outlined one note at a time.
Yeah.
If we haven't defined arpeggio in a long time. And it's, to me, it sounds improvised, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the kind of thing that for me, I can never pull off. I can't pull off an arpeggiated riff that's like 4 bars long that I will play the same every time, right? But here, that's what that is.
I disagree because I've heard you do Every Breath You Take. Which,
but I didn't write that. I'm saying
you didn't. Oh, I see what you mean. I'm saying if I write anything,
yeah. If I'm writing something, for some reason, I'm just not going to be able to play it the same every time. I can't make myself do that.
Yeah.
But to me, but it sounds like you're just sort of casually strumming these chords. You know what I mean? And so for me, I'm like, just keep it loose. You know. But these guys, like these pros, this is a fully arpeggiated thing. But it's not
copied. Like they don't play it once. Like now, if you play it now, you're like, okay, we nailed it. Just loop copy it and loop it. Yeah.
No, but it's like, no, you know what the third, you know, 16th note of bar 3 of the phrase is going to be the same note every time.
Yeah.
You could, you know. So anyway, that's just something I thought about. Like it's so natural for these guys, but I just have such a hard time playing the exact same thing as a loop. I don't know. I love the choice of when we hit the chorus, the highway song, it would have been so easy. We're in the E minor, classic E minor. It would have been so easy for them to hit a C chord there, but they go with the A minor chord, the 4 minor chord, and it gives a certain softness to that, and it opens it up in a different way as for them, as opposed to going, you know, highway song.
It still would have been something to
sing along.
The melody could have still been the same.
Yeah, melody would have been the same, but the highway song is what it goes to, the 2 minor, or depending on what, right? If you're thinking
you're
E minor is the 1, it's a 4 minor. If you're thinking of G as the 1.
It's in the key of G, if we're going relative major. So
it would be an A minor, which is a 2 minor. One day we're gonna standardize this. But anyway, it just kind of opens the thing up in a different way. It is definitely Blackfoot's Freebird.
Yeah.
I mean, which is ironic. You know what I mean? And kind of cool. It's like Blackfoot and Lynyrd Skynyrd are, they're closer than cousins.
Yeah.
They're brothers, mm-hmm. essentially, right? But there's even...
Half-brothers.
Yeah, they're half-brothers. That's right. There's even a couple of, like, direct quotes from Freebird in the guitar solo mm-hmm. where you hear, you know, yeah. a couple of lines that you're like, that same lick is literally in Freebird.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ricky Medlock is one of the early members of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Mm-hmm.
On drums, right. And then he forms Blackfoot... And he's playing lead guitar and you know, singing lead. Later returns to Lynyrd Skynyrd as a lead guitarist, one of their seven lead guitarists, you know. And he's been, like, when I think of Lynyrd Skynyrd, mm-hmm. he's one of the main guys that I yeah. think of.
Same.
It was, you know, the time that I was becoming aware of Skynyrd is mm-hmm. the time that he was coming back into the fold.
Yeah.
And so I have always loved... seeing Skynyrd footage live of him because he's always had the coolest look, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's always been the coolest looking member of Skynyrd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by the time that he like rejoined, he kind of already started going gray and he just has this cool, long gray hair and he's super tan, you know, and he's just freaking wailing on a Gibson Firebird and just going to town, dude. Explorer.
Yeah.
And so I've always thought, dude, yeah, Ricky Medlock is that dude. He's cool. Let's see. The lyrics of the song contain some references to some of their earlier work. In the third verse in particular, it says, yes, these big wheels are ready to roll. Their first album had a song called Big Wheels. Their first album, No Reservations, 1975. Even that name is ironic. Like, they're named for, like, Blackfoot. Indian, you know, mm-hmm. the tribes, three of the four, I think, founding members were all of Native American indigenous heritage. And so their first album being called No Reservations is kind of a funny irony. Not even an irony. It's probably just a middle finger, yeah. honestly. Then it says, we've been flying high and so low. The title track of the 1976 album was Flying High. All this madness ain't as crazy as it seems from madness from flying high. I'm just a stranger on this road. It's from stranger on the road from flying high. And I stand alone only in my dreams. I stand alone from no reservations. I love it when bands do this kind of self-referential stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
There's an Aerosmith song that I feel like kind of does the same thing. And right now it's escaping me, so I'm not going to search for it. Okay. Shall we meet the band? You want to meet Black?
Sure. Kid? Yeah, let's meet him.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, so we're going to meet the band, Blackfoot. Rob mentioned the American Indian roots that they have, so mm-hmm. we'll talk about that as we go through. Ricky, who I'll save all things Ricky for the end when you get to hang out with him, but on lead vocals and guitar. Charlie Hargrett on guitar. He's the only white guy in the band, if you would, in quotes.
The only European dude.
Greg T. Walker on bass, some keyboards and some vocals. He's another Native American that he makes jewelry, rides horses, and makes his own bow and arrows.
Okay.
I mean, come on. That's what you want to hear.
Right. Yeah, way to be a stereotype.
He also played a little bit of bass on the Street Survivors album with Skynyrd,
okay.
which Ricky played drums yeah. on. On drums and percussion, Jackson Spires, vocals, all his credits that I could find are on Blackfoot and Southern Rock compilations.
Okay.
Some bonus musicians on the track. Pat McAfee plays some keyboards.
McAfee?
Yeah.
Kicker for the Indianapolis Colts?
It's McCaffrey.
Oh,
that's where I was like... Right, good catch there. Thank wow. you. Pat McCaffrey. Good catch. Yeah, I went.
And now podcast megastar. Pat McAfee is like, you know, he had a mouth and he discovered that he could use it to for financial gain. So now he's like a podcast host. He's like, you know, Joe Rogan minus.
Okay.
You know, as far as like he's got a really big podcast and he's like he does announcing and stuff with WWE. He wrestles.
Okay. Oh,
like,
wow.
He's a star. He's into all kinds of stuff now.
And he also played keyboards for Pat McCaffrey. Played with a group called the Whiz Kids, and although he was never officially a member, he played with another group called Brownsville Station.
Oh, okay.
They're the people that originate. They did Smoke It in the Boys Room for the first time. So, which y'all will know from Motley Crue, right?
Motley Crue. I hate their version of Smoke It in the Boys Room, dude.
I do too, and I like
it. It feels so fake.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's a stretch. backing vocalists, there's three. Donna D. Davis, Pamela T. Vincent, and Cynthia M. Douglas. And wow. I have no clue why they all use their middle initial.
I was about to ask.
I just noticed that as I was reading. I was like, wow, all three. So I guess that's them. On percussion, Henry H. Baum Weck.
Wow.
And he's on all the Blackfoot albums and Brownsville Station as well, too. So that's the band section for Blackfoot.
H-Bomb. That's quite a nickname.
H-Bomb.
I wonder how you get that nickname.
Well, his first name's Henry.
Okay.
I don't know yet.
But how do you become H-Bomb? Like, how are you going to be referenced to, like, the Oppenheimer destroyer of worlds, the hydrogen bomb? How do you become H-Bomb?
Yeah.
I feel like my guess... This is my guess, is there's a bathroom story attached to that nickname. That's my best guess.
That's an educated guess.
Or if not a direct bathroom story, maybe a bus habit, you know?
Like, that's good. I like that.
That nickname was earned on the road.
That's right.
I feel like.
I did want to talk about minute 224 with the layered guitar parts. Take that, Scorpions, right? They so if you go to like 224, listen to how they layer in these guitar parts here. Okay.
Yeah.
I love that. Not complex lines, let's be honest. It's not, but it's cool. Freaking love it.
It's cool. And it's not even like, I don't mean this to sound bad, but it's not even like the proper harmonies in all the spots. Mm-hmm. It's more like, I'm going to play something on this rhythm.
Yeah, you play something in this key.
Yeah.
And we'll see where it lands.
Yeah. You move up when I move up.
Yeah.
You move down when I move down. Yeah,
and they're probably like, nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, keep that first take. Yeah.
But it worked. I mean, it totally works.
It's awesome. I like it too. I gotta stump the genius.
Okay, let's do it,
man. Let's do it. Stump the genius, stump the genius, stump the genius. It's time to stump the genius. Jump up and take your part. I take your part. Okay, as I mentioned, I was gonna do snakes on album covers, but I couldn't quite put all that together.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go, since we have Ricky on, I'm going famous Rickies. So here we go. Let's set a timer. I got five of them. Let me look over and try to make some mental clues for myself off these names. Let's do, 35 seconds?
That's 35 seconds.
Seven seconds each.
All right.
Famous Rickies.
Let's I'll do 30 seconds.
Oh, man. Okay. We're going to have to fly.
I believe in myself. How many you got?
Six seconds.
Oh, that's nothing, dude. That's nothing.
Here we go. 30 seconds. Count me down. Oh, start me over.
Go. Oh, all right.
Give me a 3-2-1.
Okay, 3-2-1, go.
Oakland A's, stolen base
Henderson.
Champ. Yep. If you're not first, you're last.
Bobby.
Yep. Mandolin player. Saw him with Bruce Hornsby, Kentucky Thunder.
Oh, Skaggs.
Yeah, Ricky Skaggs. Comedian, co-created the British Office, Idiot Abroad.
Oh, gosh. Ricky Gervais.
Yes. Living La Vida Loca.
Martin.
Yes, boom.
Yeah. Right, okay, there we go. Let's let it run out so y'all can hear my alarm go off. But I did nail that one. Here's the alarm I've been using recently. Star Wars kick. Oh, it didn't play through my phone. Weird. Anyway, it's a job.
I heard it.
All right.
Hey, good job. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Famous Rickies. Let's see if I can think of any more. Branch Rickey from baseball. The baseball guy.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson into the league.
Ricky.
That's all I got. All right. Okay. Let's
Ricky
see.
Ricardo.
Ricky Ricardo. Good solid Ricky. Yeah, man. Should have thought of that. All right. Let's see. Blackfoot, a little bit more on them. Originally formed as Hammer in the very late 60s. I think we talk a little bit to Ricky about that, or at least you mention it.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all are going to love Ricky, dude. He's great.
He's awesome.
Great interview. Very like affable and sort of.
Super cool guy.
Yeah. They moved to New York City in 1970 and then changed their name to Blackfoot. I believe Blackfoot blew away the record of most members for bands that we've ever covered. Did you look up their like Wikipedia where it shows the little chart of like people who have been in the band and like the timeline?
No.
Dude, It's insane. By my count, there have been 52
holy cow
members of Blackfoot since its inception.
Let's do a reimagined Meet the Band section. It's going to be 6 hours long.
That's right.
52.
One, you could do a whole deck of cards,
each
of a different member of Blackfoot. That's wild. Like, just to put that reference in perspective, there's a joke in Spinal Tap about there being 37 members of Spinal Tap over the years, right? And it's supposed to be like this.
That's outlandish.
Hysterical number, right?
And there's 52 members. And let's clear this up. You heard how many people played on that track. It's a four piece.
Yeah.
You know, basically. I mean, percussion thrown in, maybe a five piece.
Yeah.
A little bit of string work probably thrown in. If you're going big production for Blackfoot, you're six members.
Yeah. And so there's been like not only just a lot of lineup changes, but even it's funny because Ricky Medlock, he's not part of Blackfoot anymore, but it's not one of these things where he's at odds with the guys. He's actually he'll still show up and play with them occasionally, come out and play a couple songs or whatever. And when they reformed, it's almost like they reformed with him as kind of an executive producer. Yeah. It's almost like
he's Pastor Emeritus Ricky Medlock.
There you go. Yes.
Those in the church get that reference.
Yes. Ricky Medlock presents Blackfoot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And he comes in, you know, and gets a big ovation from the crowd and then, you know, goes back to sipping a martini or whatever. Uh-huh. But he's, you know, and he talks about, you know, that basically Skinner is his life now. Yeah. That's, you know, since the early 90s, you know, that era of Skinner, he's been one of the staples, and he has no intention of. Mm-hmm. And we even talk about the continuation of Skinner as a, you know, as a band, and at this point as kind of like a Southern rock tradition.
Sure.
It's even bigger and different than just a band in the South. Like,
yeah,
Skinner is a you know, they might as well be a sports team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the Florida Gators, you know, and Leonard Skinner are like Florida's biggest franchises.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So he talks about how they, you know, how they decided to like keep going and you know, the things they're doing now to sort of keep that thing alive, even though none of the original members are now, you know, present. Even though he was in very, very, very early. He wasn't, as I understand it, one of the...
He wasn't on the first album, but he was on Street Survivors, which was their second album.
Yeah, and he grew up with all those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, they, you know, they had always been sort of running parallel paths. But, yeah. Okay, yeah, so not a ton of information this week, but you're going to get a lot from Ricky coming out here.
We saved all our best stuff for the interview.
Yeah, we did. We saved all our best. Saving all my love for you. All right, we're going to go talk to Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot, Leonard Skinner, and the coolest, one of the coolest hair, golly. That's true. All right, we're going to go talk to Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot, Leonard Skinner. We're going to talk about it all, and I've lost it. I do not have it. All right, we're going to go talk to Ricky Blackfoot of... Nope. Oh, I've lost it, gang. All right, we're going to go talk to Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot and Leonard Skinner. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll tuck you in on the other side. Jeez Louise.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot and Leonard Skinner and your guitar playing dreams.
Fresh garbage.
That's
everything.
Right. That's right. Ricky, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Hey, it's my pleasure, man. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, let me just start here. JP and I have talked before about Leonard Skinner on the show and that kind of thing, and things like the, you know, the Freebird solo and these extended things and how they're really, people hear them and they think you're just grabbing a guitar and ripping. But a lot of the times those things are more intricate and planned out than people have any idea about. So I'm just curious about when you're learning something like that, putting something together, what's your process for either learning a solo or rehearsing something to be able to get it right and get it the way it needs to come out?
Well, first of all, start with, if you're writing, you know, if you're coming up with a solo from scratch, you know, I took a lot of influences in my life from a lot of your, well, guitar heroes, and meaning that when I grew up, around the guitar era, way back of like, you know, during the Elvis Presley days. And, you know, I got to see Elvis when I was, my parents went to see him at the Florida Theater when I was like six, almost 7 years old. And of course, Scotty Moore was playing with him. Mm-hmm. And Scotty Moore, you know, back then, that he was the big hero of, you know, the guitar world. For me, I always, you know, was drawn toward those rockabilly kind of, you know, rock and roll kind of guys. And I listened to them for, you know, like Lonnie Mack, you know, Scotty Moore, and then all of a sudden it graduated on up toward the next thing you know, you had the Beatles. And George Harrison was like my favorite Beatle.
Okay.
He was, there was something real different about him. He wasn't a typical, you know, he wasn't a typical one of them. You know what I mean? And then the next thing you know, of course, on the scene came Jimi Hendrix. And from Hendrix and then Clapton and then Jeff Beck and then Jimmy Page. And I mean, the list goes on. Well, I really took a shine to Eric Clapton. I could hear the blues in him, the influence of the blues, just like I could hear it in Hendrix. Even my grandfather Shorty that wrote Train Train, he recognized the stuff that I was listening to. He recognized the blues influence in those guys, you know, and he would hear me in my bedroom wailing away, you know, loud and learning licks. And the way we learned licks back then was, interestingly enough, you know, when you wanted to learn a solo on a record, you know, you slowed the record down, you know, and that's the way you learned the solo. Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately for me, I was, you know, I could sing and I would learn to sing the solo as well.
Oh, cool.
And that helped me in developing, you know, when I'd go to learn a lead, that helped me to learn the lead and develop it. Well, then when I got into my own thing, of course, I was Clapton influenced and, you know, Hendrix influenced, Jeff Beck. And so I would go about myself writing a solo back then. I would start singing a melody to the chord structure. And then I would put the blues licks within it. Mm. And that's the way I came up with stuff. It really wasn't flashy. It really wasn't, you know, what they say, shredding. You know, the way I shredded and the way, say, Alan Collins shredded and all of us, we just learned how to play quick. You know what I mean? It wasn't fanning and all, you know, fanning the strings.
Right, right.
You know, moving your fingers as fast as you were fanning and, you know, the whole bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm not kicking that. I'm not knocking that. I mean, that's, if that's what you do, that's what you do. It just wasn't, you know, my thing and a lot of people's thing back then. You put more feel in the notes and in the lick that you were playing. It was all about the vibe and the feel to it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite solos, one of my favorite solos, even today, from my hero, Eric Clapton, is Crossroads. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, wow. I mean, this guy, to me, he was shredding. That was ripping it out. You know what I mean? And so when I started developing the leads for Blackfoot, I would go upon it like listening to the song and try to play what I thought the song, what would draw the song, what would draw the lead out of it, out of me to place in the song, rather than sitting there and just playing a lot of licks. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to play something meaningful. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When it came to Skynyrd, when I, you know, joined the band, I, you know, Gary got me, and one of his famous quotes was the fact that you're the closest thing I can get to Alan. Your energy, your style, the way you play, and you know, and coincidentally, we played the same guitar.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the whole bit. You know, we're long and tall, and yeah. But it worked out to where when Gary asked me to come in, you know, I've been asked what was the hardest solo for you to learn, you know, in the Skynyrd stuff. Well, I basically knew what Alan was, the licks that he was playing. And, you know, and so I came into the band, and everybody always thinks that Freebird was the hardest to learn. But actually, Freebird was the easiest solo to learn because I knew what licks he was playing. You did it in sections. Section of four, another section of four, another section of four, another section. You know, I learned it in sections. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, of course, ever since Freebird was around, I played drums to the original track, you know, when I was in Muscle Shoals. Uh-huh. I knew that solo front and back. And so when I joined the band, I can remember working it up along with the record. And I remember the first day of rehearsal with Skynyrd. We had 4 days of rehearsal before we did our first show together after I joined. And I remember the very last day of rehearsal was the day to play Freebird. And I remember walking in rehearsal and Gary looking at me going, "You ready?" I said, "Hell yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it." You know? And we did the song. I played the solo. And I remember Gary looking at me, you know, after it was over with, and we hit the ba ba ba. And Gary goes, "I'll be damned." He goes, "Great job, bro." You know, I said, "Thank you." You know, and that was it, man. We're off and running.
That's awesome. Well, you definitely touched on a lot and a lot of guitar heroes. As you mentioned, you hinted at it a little bit, but you played on drums with Skynyrd for a bit too. You were on Street Survivors on One More Time, and you played on First and Last album, and even your first band was Fresh Garbage, which became Hammer, and you led from drums. Who were some popular singing drummers at the time of this band coming out? Because I know Eagles came out in 72, but...
I'll tell you who it was.
Okay.
Was Carmine Appice.
Okay.
Carmine, man, here's a guy that was, you know, virtually the singer in Vanilla Fudge.
Mm.
Beck Bogert and Appice. He was the singer there.
Yeah.
Him and Tim Bogart. Carmine, I got to tell you, when was this? I did a podcast with him and his brother Vinny. And he could not believe this. Just like I said to Ted Nugent too, I hit him with this question. Tell me if you can remember when's the first time you met me.
Okay.
And it stumps him. Because they couldn't believe I could remember anything like that, you know? But Carmine, I said, "Carmine, tell me you met me back in the early 70s. He goes, "I did?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Tell me, can you remember when that was?" And he said, "Oh, my God." I said, "No, I wasn't with the Vanilla Fudge." And I said, he goes, "You've got me, Ricky." I said, "Skynyrd opened for Wishbone Ash and Cactus." You were in Cactus. I was the drummer for Skynyrd, and you and I stood backstage before you went on, and we had about a 10-minute conversation. Wow. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, are you kidding me? I went, nope, I'm not kidding.
What would you say your first instrument is? Would you consider yourself a drummer first that picked up guitar, or were you a guitarist that plays drums?
No. I was a guitar player at the age of 5.
Okay.
I started playing guitar. I had my granddaddy's, and it seemed like the biggest guitar in the world to me at that age.
5, yeah.
My granddaddy had an old, and we still have it in the family. As a matter of fact, my significant other, Stacy, I can't get it out of her hands. but it's an old, about a 19, I'd say probably between a 1943 and a 1945, J45.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Okay. He had it, and he had bands on and off all the time. And my granddaddy played that guitar. He had a blues style. If you go listen to Mississippi John Hurt, my granddaddy sounded just like that.
Okay.
He would put a harp rack on and he'd play the blues. He'd play the blues and stuff, which is one of the reasons why Ronnie Van Zant just really fell over my granddaddy. And, you know, used my granddaddy's inspiration for Curtis Lowe. Mm. When you hear Ronnie say he used to play it, old Dobro used to play it across his knee, that was my granddaddy, Shorty. And Ronnie and Gary and Alan, from the time I joined Skynyrd, the first time they picked me up at the airport because I had flown from New Jersey down to join the band. And we went by my parents' home, and my daddy just happened to be sitting on our front porch of our old home. And Ronnie goes, is that Shorty? I said, yeah. He goes, look, he's playing. You know, I said, yeah, he does all the time. We all got out, and Ronnie went up there and started talking to my old man, him and Gary and Alan. And my daddy was sitting there just playing the blues like he always did, you know? And Ronnie became enthralled. He just became enthralled with that. And so I started out really, well, let's even go back further than that. I was 3 years old with a miniature banjo that my granddaddy started teaching me to play. And I was on TV with him on a local television show in Jacksonville called The Toby Dowdy Show. And my granddaddy went to the leader of the band, Toby Dowdy, that had the show. It's a country show. It originated out of Jacksonville and was shown all over the Southeast, the South and the Southeast, Mid-South. And he goes to Toby one day and he says, look, my grandson, I've taught him how to play banjo. And Toby said, well, how old is he? And he said, well, he's 3 years old. He goes, come on. He said, my granddad said, no, really. He said, we've worked up a couple of songs together to sing and, you know, so forth. He said, I've got to see this. So he said, yeah, I'll bring him on the show. So I go on the show and I remained on the show from 3 years of age to 8 years of age.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And in the midst of that, I learned how to play guitar with his old J45.
That's awesome.
45. And then I learned how to play drums when I was 8 years old because I got really taken with my dad's drummer, Charlie Saddlewhite. And he taught me drums. So I kind of wanted to play everything like my granddaddy did. My granddaddy played all these stringed instruments and played them so great. And he became known. He was a road guy for all these different country artists that was going on the road, like a Hank Snow and Ernest Tubb and all these guys, you know. And so I was taking up all these instruments. And I remember my granddaddy told me one time, he says, hey, boy, let me talk to you about something. He goes, don't try to do what I do. He said, stick to one instrument and be great at it. So guitar was like that one plus the drums, but the drums worked out when I joined Skinner, you know?
That's awesome. Do you have any, so, you know, you've literally been on stage performing all your life. Does the concept of retirement even ever, like, is that even a thing for you, or are you just going to die on a stage somewhere?
How do you spell it? I don't even know what the hell you're talking about, man.
That's the answer we want.
That's kind of what I thought.
That's what we want.
Here's what, man? Here's what I really believe. If you are a real, true, and passionate lover of the arts, which music is of the arts, you never retire. And I've said this many times, and I'm quoting from Merle Haggard. There was a young lady doing an interview with Merle Haggard here once, and she said, Mr. Haggard, we know that you don't need to be out here doing this. That you have been out here all your life, running up down the road, playing for people. We know you don't. Why, at this stage of your life and your age, why do you do it? He said, honey, this is what I do. He said, I play music. And you know what? That has stuck with me. I mean, it's really stuck with me for a long time. I mean, when somebody goes, oh, Ricky, when are you going to retire? You know? I look at them, you know, and they might be my age or anything. I go, well, when are you going to retire? You know? I said, what do you do for a living? They'll tell me, I said, boy, that sounds like boring as hell to me. You know? I said, my thing is not boring.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? But also, I have a real passionate love for the guitar and music and singing, you know? I won't ever get out of this game. I'm already, you know, Leonard Skinner is my number one love, other than my significant other and my daughter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Leonard Skinner is my number one passion when it comes to the arts. Stacy and I have already done acoustic show together. We're gonna embellish on that. We sing. Hey, she goes all the way, and she is sang with some of the world's greatest artists, starting from Keith Richards and Ron Wood to Joe Walsh, all the way up through Kid Rock. Yeah. I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
Right. So both of us, we took a gig for a corporation that had like 70, 80 people in the room. We played 30 minutes, got a standing ovation for what we were doing. We sound great together. So, hey, you know what? We want to do more of them.
That's good.
I've got a little side band that I'm putting together, and it's probably going to be called, I don't know, the Ricky Medlock Group, and going to go out. And what we're going to do is I want it to be about not only playing great Blackfoot tunes and maybe some Skinner stuff thrown in, but great songs of artists that influenced me.
That's a great segue into a question that I had, because Blackfoot does great covers on their, even on Strikes, they've got I Got a Line on You, which is a Spirit cover. They got Wishing Well, a Free cover. You do Tupelo Honey by Van Morrison on the 99 After the Rain album. What do you look for when you're talking about artists that inspire you, when you pick your covers? Yeah. How do you decide that? Is that what you think you'll sound good on, or more like what you cut your teeth on? Or
no, here's the way I do it. The way I love to do stuff, I pick stuff of artists that have influenced me. Paul Rogers is my I don't know. He was always my biggest inspiration. little did I know that years later I'd get to be great friends with him, which thrilled me. As a matter of fact, not too many years ago, got to stand on the stage with him in Bad Company and play Gone, Gone, Gone with him.
That's awesome.
And my God, man, he just, he was just, he was like a god, you know? I could hear all the bluesiness in him, and I just love the guy. Well, if you look on YouTube, you know, back when Skinner did these Simple Man cruises, Stacy and I, we put together Ricky Medlock and Friends Jam Night. And if you look on there, there's several takes of it, but there's one 5-minute take of us doing Feel Like Making Love.
Bad Company came
and,
there.
It went down big time.
Yeah.
So things like that, artists that have influenced me is what the way I love to pick. If you're going to do a cover song, you know, and that's the way I pick it. And if you're going to do a cover song by somebody, you better do it really good.
Yeah.
And it better be as good, or maybe try to be a better, but it better be as good as the original. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you're going to get ass whooping over it. You really will.
People will let you know.
Yeah, that's for sure. You're a member, as I understand it, of the Native American Music Awards Hall of Fame, inducted the same year as another friend of the show, Felipe Rose of the Village People, back in 2008. Tell us about that honor and a little about what your indigenous heritage means to you.
Well, first of all, growing up, I knew that I had quite a bit of Native American blood in me. Mm-hmm. My grandparents never held back on that. They always told me where it came from, whose side of the family on both, especially my father and my mother. And I grew up really being proud of that. I mean, back in my day, just like Jack, the drummer for Blackfoot, and Greg, I mean, you took flack about it. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Which is crazy to think about.
But, yeah.
That would be, but anyway, yes.
But I have a lot of beliefs in the fact that we're, you know, what blood runs through my veins. And I'm very proud of that. I got a heritage that I'm very proud of. Ancestors, as you might call it. I'm in touch with a lot of prominent Native American, whether they be musicians, actors, actresses. And I love being in that circle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I got inducted into the Native American Music Hall of Fame, a lady named Ellen Bellows, who is one of the heads of that, called me up and said, "Ricky, I wanted to let you know you're being inducted into the Native American Music Hall of Fame." I went, "What?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "The guy that spearheaded you being inducted in it is none other than Robbie Robertson."
Oh, wow.
Of the band.
Yeah, the band. That's awesome.
And I went, "You got to be kidding." She goes, "No." She said, "He's the one that spearheaded you being inducted into the Hall of Fame." Well, I went, and wow, it was such an honor to stand up in front of all these natives. And of course, you know, other races too, you know, in the audience and stuff. I was inducted. The two guys that did the induction ceremony that stood up there with me. Number one, a guy named Houston Geronimo, great-great-grandson of the man himself, Geronimo. A guy named Lance White, who is the great-great-grandnephew of Crazy Horse.
Oh, yeah, wow. That's awesome.
And I got a great photo of me standing between them. And it was really funny because I've got this tattoo of Crazy Horse right here on. Everybody by now has seen it. And there was a crew guy walking by, and Lance is right here by this tattoo. And the guy walks by and he goes, "Wow, that guy's on your shoulder." And I went, "You're not far from wrong, bro."
That's great.
But I got to tell you, man, the Native American community, I am upset about a lot of stuff. I speak out about a lot of stuff, about a lot of wrongs. The Native American community is all but kind of forgotten about when it comes into today's realm of talking about all the other races in this country. You know, you can tune in any news show and they'll say, "Well, today, you know, among whites and blacks and Hispanics and Chinese and this and that," and you never hear them say anything about natives. I mean, there's nothing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I fight very hard to make sure that people remember. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm loaded with all these tats all over that's all native, and people will see them and they go, "Oh my God, we love your tattoos." I said, "Look at them and remember."
Right.
That's awesome. You know?
And that's my biggest thing to today's society is when I get the opportunity to fight. I have become friends with a great lady, a beautiful lady, of heart. She is the Secretary of Interior. Her name is Deb Holland. And no matter what party she's affiliated with or what parties anybody gives a damn about, because I don't, I'm an independent. I register as an independent, and I do what the Great Spirit gave me, a brain to be able to go in and read about all these people and to decide for myself, not from the news media, decide for myself who to vote for. But Deb Holland, she has just recently gotten back 400, and I think it's 450,000 acres in Utah handed back to the natives because of all the burial sites in Utah.
Wow.
Or wait a minute, I'm sorry, Nevada.
Okay.
And listen, she does great work. I've become friends with her and I'm glad of it. And if there's ever an opportunity to go to Congress and speak out, you know, on the subjects, I'll be more than glad to. But you know what? I'm a proud member of the Native American Music Hall of Fame.
Hey, there we go.
It was great to be inducted. I stood up there and said, you know what? I told everybody, I went, "Hey, you know what? This is better than being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame." You know, which, by the way, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame turned me down from going in with Skinner.
Wow.
Travesty. Unbelievable. Yes. Travesty.
Well, if you can believe that, they did.
I can't, because at my age, you are my Skinner. Yeah. Like, you're my...
We know you as Skinner.
Yeah, you're the Skinner that I know.
Well, when my name was going to be put in there, they go, "Well, no, he didn't have that much importance in the band, and he wasn't with the band, you know, long enough." But yet, they put all the guys in, and I don't have nothing against it, but they put the guys in, okay, that was involved in the disaster and all that. Well, okay, you put Bob Burns. I took Bob Burns' place for 2.5, almost 3 years, so I don't get to go in. And I just find that to be, well, a little bit...
it's sketchy.
We can tell it's a little bit one-sided, guys.
Well, I'll
throw out some things that I think kind of go unnoticed that you contributed. And there's parts of these where we just... embellish on things we love about the people we're chatting with. So the first and last album is an underrated Skinner album, in my opinion. Some bangers on there, two of which you wrote, The Seasons with a little mandolin work here for you, and Preacher's Daughter, which has one of those classic Skinner riffs. I love that. My favorite Ricky moment, though, is on Skinner Nation from Gods and Guns. Great riff, co-lead vocal on stage, and you got the straight stand. You don't even need a boom stand. You just got the straight mic stand. You're singing. Freaking love that. And I saw y'all on the Vicious Cycle tour with 38 Special in Chattanooga back in, it would have been like 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. I saw y'all. And one of my favorites of what I would call modern Skinner is Red, White, and Blue. What's the band's dynamic of that when you, with, you know, the passing of Leon and the introduction of Ian Evans on bass and Michael on drums, not counting his involvement in the Christmas album? What's kind of the band dynamic at that time in like the Vicious Cycle album?
Well, you know, we had lost Leon. And I'll just go about it this way, okay? It's kind of interesting that we called the album Vicious Cycle, because this band has been involved in a vicious cycle. When we lost Leon, we knew Leon was in trouble at the time, health-wise. We had Ian. Ian was such a lover of Lynyrd Skynyrd and great bass player. Well, when Leon got really sick, we took Ian on the road with us so that when Leon couldn't perform at night, Ian would step in, you know. Well, poor Leon, man, they found him deceased in his hotel room and Jacksonville, and then we took Ian on. Then when you go on down the line, Huey had decided that he was going to leave the band and go back, play with the Outlaws again, and next thing you know, Huey's gone. But we ended up getting Sparky in the band to cover for, you know, for Huey, but for a time, it was just me and Gary like the old days with him and Alan. And why I'm relating it like this is because I'm relating it to that title of that record, Vicious Cycle. Then we lost, you know, we lost Ian during, you know, during the recording of God and Guns. And, that was a tough one, because here's poor Ian over in the hospital undergoing cancer treatments and, you know, us having to keep going. Then we lost Billy. And I got to tell you guys, through it all, Gary, Johnny, and I had come together after we lost Billy. And we really seriously said, what are we doing, you know? Why don't we just call it a day and just, you know, and be done with it? Well, Gary was the guy I didn't want to really, but I was going by the leader of our band, which was Gary Risinger. You know, if that's what the boy wanted to do, hey, that's what he wanted to do. Gary says, you know, I don't want to see us go out like this. I don't think it's right. I think Billy would have wanted us to keep pushing the music, playing the music. So we decided and we got auditions together and we got Peter Keys. Now brings us up to the Vicious Cycle part of Gary Rossington now. And now we've lost our, you know, the last of the founding members.
Yeah.
And our brother, our ball, our, you know, everything. And Johnny and I, this has really been a hard one for me and Johnny, and it's still a hard one for me, because after being all those years standing on stage with him in the very beginning of the years, and now for 27 and a half years of standing there with him every night looking at him, and making sure I kept my eye on him, and we had this camaraderie thing together. And Gary had indicated to his wife, Dale, that he did not want the music to end with him. You know, that for the millions of fans out there and the way the influence that this music has had on people, and we're drawing audiences from the age of 8 to 80. You know what? Johnny and I really didn't want to see the band go out like that. So now the way it is, guys, the vicious cycle has started and it's falling right now at our feet. And you know what? We're getting ready to go on and do this 50th anniversary tour. 50th anniversary from the, you know, first release.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think back all the way to the first and last record, we started rehearsing the first and last record when I landed in Jacksonville, when I first joined the band and agreed to play drums. We dropped my stuff off at my mom and dad's and went straight to rehearsal and started working on all the material that 2 weeks later we'd be sitting in Muscle Shoals recording.
Yeah.
And I look back on it now, and I can still remember everything about that time. I knew in my heart, really in my heart, we were creating something that was going to be remembered.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it. I felt it. And wow. Now I look at it and I didn't really realize at that time, of course you never do, how far it was going to take us and where we would be sitting at today. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I got to tell you something, fellas, you want to hear something that really smacked me upside the head was, oh boy, we were booked to play a gig. And Gary had passed away, and we were booked to play Plant City here in Florida. And we couldn't get out of it. We couldn't. And Johnny and I just knew that it was going to be a hard one, yeah. You know. We did a tribute video to Gary, and we're still using it on Tuesday's Gone. Now, Tuesday's Gone is probably one of my top five favorite tunes of Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was my ma's favorite. So now when we go into it, I can't look back at the screen because our video wall has that tribute to Gary. And so that night that we're getting ready to play that gig, management comes in with this great big plaque about like this, you know, that looked like a silver thick dinner plate in the middle of it. And it said it had Spotify's logo in it. And I had to take a second look at the number that was on it. And Johnny thought for a minute, it said, you know, here's to congratulate Lynyrd Skynyrd for, Johnny thought it said, 1 million streams of Sweet Home Alabama. I went, no, Johnny, look at it. He looked at 1 billion streams.
Goodness gracious.
Of Sweet Home Alabama.
Goodness gracious.
Yes. And so to going back to your original thing about the vicious cycle, that vicious cycle led us up all the way up to now.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
And it was a vicious, it has been a vicious cycle, no doubt, you know?
Yeah. It's and you touched on a lot there. I mean, Tuesday's yeah. Gone was the first guitar solo I ever learned. So it's special to me.
There you go.
And I can only imagine what that Gary video looks like because the 20 album, when y'all put it out 20 years since the plane crash, y'all had an awesome version of Traveling Man with Ronnie in Memorial on vocals and Johnny able to do the duet with the killer technology. So I can only imagine how awesome the one with Gary is. I've not seen it.
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you seen the latest tour? that we do?
I've not seen the latest tour, no. I need to get out and see it.
Do yourself a real favor. You need to come out and wait till you see what we've done in Freebird.
Okay. Well, there you go.
That's the teaser, kids.
That's the teaser. Yeah.
From the time that we first started doing it up until right now, I've seen grown men shedding tears. So that'll, you've got to get out and you've got to witness this.
Well, you got to witness it. Definitely make that happen. We will make that happen. Yeah. Next time y'all come through Nashville, we'll be there and we'll get together and hang out.
Right.
Well, you've been so kind, Ricky. This has been a lot of fun. Hope you've enjoyed yourself. There's one question that we ask everybody. So you're on tour, either doing Ricky Medlock Group, you're doing Blackfoot, you're doing Skynyrd. One of the many things that you're doing. You go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I would get a Three Musketeers bar when I was growing up. My mom would say you could have any candy bar you want. It's the most ounces. So they're all the same price. So I get a Three Musketeers bar. What do you get? What does Ricky Medlock get in a gas station?
Wow. Well, you're talking about what I get now?
Yeah, you can do now. You can do previous till now. You can answer in Ricky Medlock fashion, however you want to embellish.
First and last.
Well, when I was a kid, we'd go into a gas station, and my daddy'd go, "I know what you want, boy." I said, "Yeah, you do." He'd get me a bottled Coke or RC Cola.
Oh, yes, RC.
And a pack of peanuts, and I'd pour the peanuts in the cola.
Okay, yeah, that's old school right there.
And he told me, "That is a poor boy's lunch." Okay? Do you know I still do that today?
Yeah? No kidding.
I still drink RC. Our listeners can't see, but I'm holding up a can of RC. I prefer RC. I love RC.
Dude, I still, to this day, one of my favorite places, first of all, Johnny swears up and down that I was a truck driver in my former life. Because I love to get in one of my vehicles, and I love to drive long distance. Hmm. My gal and I have a little lake home up near Memphis. She's from Memphis.
Okay.
And a good Southern woman. So can sing her ass off, man. But I love to get in one of the vehicles, and I love that long distance driving, because for Ricky, it's listening to music, thinking a lot, planning a lot, thinking about things that I'd like to get accomplished. And the one thing I love to do, I got them all planned out on my route. I stop at every Love's truck stop.
Okay.
Now, everybody asks me, why do you stop at a Love's? Well, I'm going to tell you. When Blackfoot was touring, back in the day where we had a van and we had an equipment truck following us and all that, we'd be in Texas, because that's a Texas company. We'd be in Texas, and Love's was just a little gas station where you could pull in, and we'd pull in and get a chili dog and maybe a Coke or a RC, whatever you wanted. And Love's became our big thing to stop at.
Okay.
Right? Then all of a sudden, they got bigger. Then they got bigger. Well, now, I have a good friend of mine that buys up a lot of the properties that a lot of your Love's truck stops are built on.
Ah.
So, when I travel, I'll take a picture of one and send it to him, and he'll send it to the corporate. that the guy from Leonard Skinner's at Love's.
That's awesome.
Well, when I stop at Love's now, I'll get a cup of coffee. I love to drink coffee. And I'll get a coffee, get me a big bottle of water, and then I might, if I got a sweet tooth running, I'll get myself a Snickers.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
And I'll tell you a good story real quick before y'all got to go. tell you a good story. So when I joined Lynyrd Skynyrd, the phone call to me was from Gary Rossington. And this is before he had me to audition, which is really funny in itself. But the phone message was on, you remember when you had the phones that had the little tapes?
Oh, yeah, answer machine.
And you recorded the message. Okay.
Yeah.
The message was, hey, Ricky, this is Brother Gary. I want you to learn I Ain't the One, Saturday Night, That Smell, and Freebird. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to audition you. And if you pass the audition, I'll give you $1.50 in a Snickers bar. So, fast forward. About, 15 years later or something? We finished playing one night and we get up on the bus. And in the front galley there, up on the counter, I look and it said Ricky on the piece of paper. And I look and it's a Snickers bar with $1.50 wrapped up in it.
Yes.
That's great.
And the note on it said, paid in full.
That's great. That is money. I love that so much. That's great. Man. That's a great way to. Ricky, you've been a blast. We hope you've had a good time. You're such a great storyteller.
You got it, buddy.
We'll get back again together and we'll talk about Bo Bice on American Idol and two drummer setups and all that stuff. We'll do round two with Ricky. I'm sure that'd be a lot of fun.
You got it, man. Anytime you want to do it, let me know.
You got it, buddy.
Yeah, man, and come see us.
We'll do it. I promise you we will. We'll see you soon.
All right, brother. Y'all take care.
Thanks, thank man. You, Ricky. We'll have a good one, man.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Ricky Medlock of Blackfoot, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Ricky Medlock Group.
He was such a fun storyteller. Oh, and I, that's one of those that I wish we were a video show because he just has...
His body language, his energy.
The energy that you see him with on stage is the same. He's just like that.
He was wearing this green shell necklace.
I'm telling you, he's a good-looking guy.
We should have taken a picture.
He is aging well, and he's a good-looking dude. Yeah. And here's what I thought about him while we were talking to him. I thought... He could have been a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
He has the delivery and the look and the like sort of manner of speaking.
Yeah.
He could have been a great.
He would be great on the mic.
Yeah.
Pre and post battle.
Yes. Yeah. Like backstage interview, you know, like he thought.
He would definitely have an Indian or a Native American name.
Right. Yeah. He could like a cool, like Blackfoot is a
Blackfoot's
cool,
awesome.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyway, he was fantastic.
His tats look, they've aged well.
Yes, that's right. And that's what I wanted to say is I want to make him a shirt that says, don't just love the tats, love the people.
That's good.
Right?
Remember.
Just wear with no arm, a sleeveless shirt that just says.
That's good. Yeah. Don't just love the tats, love the people.
Yeah.
That's money.
So our best gas station answer, like nobody ever gives a story,
dude, that was like, that was like.
But to get a story that connects to Gary, who just passed away in March,
as we
record this just a couple months ago, and to be able to connect that to the gas station question really felt like something special.
Gives the feels. That's good. That's a goodie.
So, amazing, amazing way to, get to cap off this interview with a legendary artist and part of a, absolute, classic rock legendary band. So really cool to get to talk to Ricky, really cool to get to make the show, and get to do all the things that we've got to do because of it. So thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back next time on the Great Song Podcast. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm JP.
Go listen to some music.